Hello, and welcome back to the Access Point, where we examine real challenges Black and Brown aspiring and experienced professionals face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. Well, let me just start with this disclaimer. I want you to know that the thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the hosts or guests may be affiliated. Good evening. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds, and I am an author, followership coach, professor, who has a research focus on toxic followership, which means why do people follow bad people? I am not alone, as you may know. I have my awesome co-host with me, Dr. Lonnie Morris Jr.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome to the Access Point, everyone. I am Lonnie Morris, a management consultant and professor. I spend my time helping extremely talented professionals make work a less terrible place. I'm excited about this week's conversation. We're talking about tough conversations related to performance and progression in the workplace. We know that sometimes the communication there can break down. It's all too familiar for some of us. And sometimes the people who should have answers for you can't provide those, or the goals you're supposed to meet are no longer the right things. And so we really want to unpack this and dive into it. And to help us get under this, we have an incredible guest tonight, Ms. Keon Gary, who is a futurist with Cognizant Research focused on modernizing value systems and optimizing evaluation methodology to create dynamic and inclusive work environments. She's worked with clients across industries to design, measure, and optimize digital customer experience strategies. Her professional experience spans advertising operations, growth marketing, go-to-market strategy, design thinking, and corporate innovation. And in her spare time, she teaches digital marketing, analytics, and media strategy at MIT and Northwestern. She has a Bachelor's of Science from Babson College and earned an MBA from University of South Carolina. Ms. Keon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Happy to be here. Longtime listener. Very excited to talk to you guys.
We appreciate that. This is going to be fun. And I love that you are a futurist. And I want you to give a little context for our listeners about what that means and the role you play in your organization, so we can begin to really grapple with the things we're going to talk about today in that context.
Sure. So I leverage a long career in digital strategy to consult and examine the future of work. My research focuses on the employee-employer relationship. And as a futurist, I help business leaders better understand and navigate what the world looks like for the next 3 to 5 years.
That is perfect. And that's a great way to start. So let's imagine, right? We are in this space where we all are dealing with these issues around communicating things about work, particularly with our supervisors that deal with how we're performing, how we're moving forward, the things we need to get accomplished, how we've achieved those things. And we recognize that communicating about this with your superiors is so critical. It's a part of what we do in most of our jobs. So I wonder, if it's so significant to our daily lives, why do all things related to talking about performance reviews, manager feedback, and career progression seem to suck so much? I'm gonna give you some context here. About 2 weeks ago, I saw from the Society of Human Resources Management, SHRM, they did this article called The Performance Review Problem. And here's some key things from that. One, they've got a quote in there that says, reviews generally don't work. They cited a study from Gallup from last year that said 95% of managers who were surveyed says they are dissatisfied with their organization's review system. They also noted that performance management is not evolving at the same pace of the workforce. And then they give us some really, I think, alarming statistics. Let's try this. More than 9 in 10 people who were surveyed cited that driving organizational performance is a key objective for their management system and communication about work. Yet less than half of them are happy and say that their system at their organization is meeting that objective. Nearly 75% of them said supporting career development of their employees is a primary objective for evaluating performance and communicating with your boss about it. But just about 30% of them said their performance management program in their organization is meeting that objective. Less than half of them agreed that managers in their organization are effective at assessing the performance of their direct reports and giving feedback around that. And only 1 in 3 people indicated that employees feel their performance is evaluated fairly and they're communicated about that regularly. So what is the issue here? Ms. Keon, start us off.
People lie.
You don't say so.
Yes. So I think the first thing to note, right, especially when it comes to communication, is this is a lot more art than science. So as an employee, you're negotiating on behalf of yourself, right? So that's going to get to the structure of the organization, how these companies are set up. It's you against this mega machine. So you have to keep in mind what they want from you and what you're there to do. It's not so much a recipe as cooking by feel. It's nuanced, and every individual is going to have a different set of circumstances that they have to navigate. So there are kind of 3 levels is how I think about this. So big picture, it's about the structure. Corporations are designed based on the military, right? So it's more about production, less about your progression up the chain. It's hierarchical. There is no nuance. There is not variability. They need predictability, right? So that is in conflict with what I'm looking for as an employee, because my career progression at this company means variability for them. And that conflicts with the shareholder value, the story they need to tell to make sure that they are getting all of those shareholder returns that they keep promising. And so leadership needs to be able to forecast, and performance is also a variable, right? So if all of your employees are doing really, really well, in theory, you should be rewarding all of them. So take that 10% bonus for one high performing employee and then multiply that by however many high performing employees you have, and now you have a huge bonus to pay out. So there are a couple of things that are in conflict there, and companies are designed for efficiency. The next level there is when there's a need or a gap, right? A role to fill. I think there's a hard truth here that people in general are not trained to be leaders, right? We become leaders based on our individual contribution often, not always your ability to lead. And so people development is not always that important. We really just want to know how efficiently can you produce. And then that means if you're not really developed or trained to be a real leader, you're probably going to lack the range to understand performance of your team members. And that means you're going to default to your biases. And that's a huge problem, right? So we have the inputs for success are different for each individual. And then you have the construct of objective measures versus culturally biased measures. And there's no incentive for most leaders and managers to be objective in their measurement of employees.
Well, I think you hit all the points. Show's over. Thank you very much.
Dropped the my
end. Right?
I think you said leaders, some leaders are untrained. Mm-hmm. Can you say that louder for the people in the back of the room? They're unable to conduct the performance reviews. And not only do they revert to what they know, they revert to what they don't mm-hmm. know. And so they'll follow suit because there is no real performance measures set in place for them to follow. The other thing that I wanted to mention is about how companies, depending on where you work, so coming from a sales environment would be the protection of dollars for the company. So they are not prepared. Again, the shareholders' values is what's important for them. And that's what they're there to protect. So every year, the goal for sales is hopefully meet this, but we hope that you don't.
Not right? Hopefully.
Right. And if you do, we're going to make it very different and harder next time. So it's kind of the whole philosophy of going to a casino. Those casinos don't show up in our neighborhood because everybody that's going is winning. And that's exactly how performance reviews really show up in the workplace. That's why there's a lack of confidence in performance reviews from the employee standpoint as well, because you set the measures for me to meet. This is how I conduct myself throughout the year. And then at the end of the year, I'm always given this disappointing big surprise.
Absolutely. I think just to add to that, Dr. Wendy, we need to be really honest about the fact that your manager and your leaders, they're not measured by your professional development.
Ooh.
So what incentive do they have to pay attention to that?
You're right. You're right.
And
wow, I'm breathless. You took my breath away with that one.
And then just to add to that, when we're talking about measurement and performance evaluation in particular, employees of color aren't evaluated based on standards that fit how they show up. So going back to my original big picture point about how corporations were started based on the military, they were also started for one particular demographic, especially in the States, right? White men. And so now you have all of these different people coming into the organization, and we've never stopped to think about how did we start this and who was it for and who do we have now and how do we address all of their issues?
And that makes sense to me. And that goes back to what this piece said from Sherm, saying, hey, we're not even evolving the process the way that the workforce is evolving. It makes me think about, I had a client once who told me, he set a goal with his manager to achieve whatever it was. Let's say it's a 100 for some project they had, right? To get 100 new sales in that. And he met that goal to get 100 new sales. Well, when the evaluation came back, the manager said, oh, well, your goal was 100 and you made 100, but that's not excellent. That's just average because you met the goal that you stated. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. This is a dangerous subject for me to get into, because one of the things I one of the things I look at through my work is rating systems, and oftentimes these rating systems are nothing more than a shortcut to dole out bonuses. They're not really reflective of your performance over the course of the year, your goals, objectives, whatever you're supposed to deliver because you work here. So some companies have normalization efforts, right? So they might have a scale from 1 to 5, with 5 being exceeds all expectations and 3 is meets all expectations. And 1 is basically you're put on a performance improvement plan immediately or fired. And so with a team of 100, we can't give everybody 5s. So we'll go ahead and drop you down.
Distribution.
Yep. We'll drop you down to a 3. And that's not reflective of what I actually did over the course of a year. That's not reflective of the impact I've made on my team or my organization. That's not reflective of how I impacted everyone around me. That's just a numbers game.
Yeah, and I had a client who dealt with that very exact thing and got pushback from her superior because she pushed back on it saying, but this isn't right, right? The people in my unit have all performed at this level, but the HR folks said, but you can't give everybody 5s, that you have to rate them in some way. So let's talk about this a little bit more, particularly as it relates to people of color. And I think sometimes when we're imagining or at least living out this, experiencing this, we know that what's communicated about our performance may not be negative per se, but it might just be low quality. And I want us to talk about how do we move that. And there's a piece from last year in Forbes that talked about the low quality feedback that people of color get in the workplace, and that it impacts what they earn over time and opportunities they get over time. So, for example, it said that women are 11 times more likely to be described by their superiors, particularly in some type of rating or feedback about performance, as abrasive, more than 11 times than white men as abrasive. Black women are four times more likely to be described as overachievers versus white men. Asian men are 7 times more likely to be described as brilliant or genius versus Latina women. Black employees were more than 2 times more likely to be described as passionate versus white employees. And only 8% and then 18% of Black employees and 14% of Latino employees were described as ambitious. So in these cases, it might, outside of the abrasive one, there might not be saying negative things about you, but the language that's used and that's communicated back to you in writing or verbally is loaded because it has this spin on it. How do we navigate that?
I just sighed.
Yeah.
So it's important, in my opinion, to note that identity plays a bigger role in career progression than people like to let on. People come to the table with cultural and value-based ideas. And what's really important here is who sees you as valuable and who wants to invest in you. And that ties back to the system, right? I have to allow you opportunities to move up and around. I know this is a little bit of a sidestep to the question, but there's a documentary called Stand on Showtime with Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. And one of the things that really stuck with me after watching that, essentially, this is a paraphrase, not a direct quote, but it doesn't matter how good you are as a player, someone has to want you to be great.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that has resonated throughout my career personally for a really long time. I've only had 2 really good managers out of my nearly 2-decade career. And it's tough. And feedback is even harder to come by that's meaningful. Part of why it's not great is sometimes your managers don't have the time. Sometimes they don't have the space to mentally free themselves of everything else that their life demands of them, sure. But ultimately, they're just not being great managers. I just want to say that flat out.
What about the manager that fears the fact that you may be great, and the manager that may be selective about helping you to be great only to a certain extent?
Well, if I knew the answer.
You can be great, but you can't be better than me.
Right. Yes. That's the word, right?
This is all too prevalent. And I think it's especially the case for Black and Brown employees in particular. I see it in my own networks, right? There are people who are moving up the chain of command in a very accelerated way that I personally don't always understand. And then I look at some of my closer friends and I'm like, why aren't you way up at VP status? Why aren't you at CEO status? Why aren't you progressing in the way you should be? Because I know you and I've worked with you. I know the value you add. So insecurity is another real big thing we need to be honest about, and all of the baggage that people bring to work with not wanting to be, outshone, I guess. I think that's a law of power, right? Don't outshine the master. But I don't know. I was always taught, do your best, whatever that means, just do your best. And sometimes that's too much for a lot of people.
right? Because it may put them on the spot. And one of the other things that I was thinking about when you were speaking is the spaces that are created for us are so minimal, if at all, exist at all, that it creates an environment where there's a fight for that one space, right? We're going to only let one excel and let all the rest of them watch. So how do you create an environment that is collective about seeing and ensuring that you are great, that you make it to that level, that next level in your career? Career development looks different and should look different in the workspace. But from these studies, we're seeing that even now, it hasn't changed much.
Right. My short answer, leaders need to be better. This
absolutely.
How I show up is really important, right? That's all I can control. So in terms of creating space that cultivates trust and comfort for other people to give me authentic and transparent feedback, wanting to see me succeed, all of those things, I have to do what I need to do to be comfortable and to be considerate of other people. So the other person,
there you go.
The other person matters. If you want to create and hold space, you've got to do what you can to support them to show up as well. That's a fact. But that only goes so far. And I'm not saying it's going to work, but that is my end of the bargain, right? I have to show up in a way that is as supportive and conducive to the environment that I want to see cultivated as possible. And then I just have to hope that the other person comes with that other 50%. I think it's really important for us to remember that there's only so much that we can actually control.
So I'm glad we're talking about control here, because you've already mentioned this. We've already hinted at there's definitely bias in these processes. There's bias that drives some of the conversations and that sort of tints the view to which we see this. So I'm wondering, how do we begin to dismantle these patterns of bias around the conversations related to job performance and career goals and progression? There are a few things I want to note about this. And I saw this in Harvard Business Review, and it talked about a case study of how one company began to eliminate bias from particularly dealing with performance issues. They've got these four patterns they talk about. I think the two that stand out to me, one is it says prove it again, which is this notion that people of color, you don't have the luxury to stand on the laurels of the one time accomplishment, no matter how good that is, that each time that we go up for a conversation or we're evaluated or people giving us feedback, they are evaluating us from the beginning, from the next time, right? We don't get the luxury of leveraging all those things. We have to be evaluated all the time. The second one that I thought was pretty fascinating is they called the tightrope, that the lanes through which we can walk are different than our white peers and counterparts, that they get much more room to explore and to behave differently, and they get to display behaviors that aren't acceptable for us. And then Dr. Wendy, I want you to start with this one first, because we talked about this in our book in 2021, When Leadership Fails. We talked, there was a specific chapter about performance appraisal and giving feedback to employees around what it means to do this. And we identified in the book four mistakes that are about bias. The one is lack of objectivity. We've already talked about that, that people who are evaluating the performance of people of color are sometimes using their own experiences to judge rather than looking at this with a clear lens, that there is sometimes this bias of freshness and that they are evaluating based on the most recent thing that happened. And who knows, particularly in this environment, it could be something that's bad. We didn't make our sales quota. We didn't make this thing. We just had to do layoffs. And so now you're your feedback around your performance is reflective of this thing that just happened in the last 90 days, not for all the other great things that you've done for the last 12 months. Sometimes it's about causal attributions, and I've experienced this, and I've dealt with it with multiple clients, where your performance or your actions are being mischaracterized and weaponized against you. And then the last one that we mentioned was about first impression, that people who are giving feedback about performance are sometimes focused on when they first met you or the first encounter they had, rather than all the things that have transpired since then. So Dr. Wendy, how do we tear down these walls of bias?
I'm sorry. I think I'm just like Keon, where I just, oh gosh, just give a big sigh.
Yeah.
Not only is it important to tear down the biases that come into this space, when you talk about bringing your best self to work, remember your best self is your best to you. And that's not necessarily how everyone else sees you. When you walk in, if you are labeled the angry Black woman or an overachiever, and others may not appreciate, I'm sorry about that. Others may not appreciate the fact that you are in the room and you might make them appear that they have to do work. That can work against you when it comes to performance appraisals. I think if leaders would think more about using the incentives for or executive management to have leaders be incentivized by ensuring that their subordinates or their employees would be excelling in their career development, right? In professionally developing themselves and moving the company along to meet the goals of the organization. But that's not the case.
You know what just made me think about? That is the standard pyramid marketing scheme, right?
Exactly.
You at the top, you get paid if everybody else gets paid.
Right.
If you make the people below you better, then you benefit from that.
That's right. It's multi-level marketing kind of scheme.
Right. That's been around forever.
And it just seems simple to make sure that they have some skin in the game to ensure that you are going to succeed. So we often look at corporate America, but look at higher education. How does that work? We really have to think about that if we're going to root out bias. Because everybody's coming to the table with something. But if, in fact, everyone that works for you is successful, that's how we ensure that you're going to get your bonus.
This feels so simple. Is it me?
It does, right?
That is the magic apple, but nobody's biting.
They're really not. Yeah. You said it. I don't have anything to add.
All right. So let's try this then, because it's extremely frustrating, not only when you've dealt with it yourself, and I imagine that both of you have, and I know I have, and I've dealt with multiple colleagues and clients who are dealing with this all the time. So we talk about it. And so I want to move a little bit into, Keon, let's talk about the future of this, right? Part of me is thinking about what we're doing now with artificial intelligence and how that's driving so much in our organizations, and how we see, particularly with stuff like ChatGPT, we're seeing that and how it's informing some of our experiences. But we also know that when you start to take technology, if we're already flawed just by humans, and humans are programming technology and building algorithms, so now we can possibly have flawed technology. So what do we do now that the digital divide can also drive gender and racial inequities as it relates to this notion of communicating about performance? How do we protect people of color in the workforce when it comes to these AI-induced practices? Now, I just saw this maybe a few weeks ago on peopleofcolorintech.com, and they actually said that ChatGPT has performance reviews that are sexist and racist.
Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, and it's already starting, right? So they said when they tried practice runs with it, looking at recruiters who were trying to get employees into positions and people who were having conversations with employees about positions, when they described someone as bubbly and asked the technology to create feedback for them, that the presumption in the feedback was that the employee was a white woman. When they described someone as ambitious and confident, that the technology presumed this was about a man. When they described someone as collaborative and helpful, the technology presumed this was about a woman. And when they were creating artificially intelligent responses to Black employees, they would find that it noted that they had unique perspectives because of their backgrounds.
So now we're going to have to create a Black Chat GPT.
But that's technically not wrong, right? It is.
Right?
The Black experience is unique if your starting point is the white experience. That's technically accurate. Right. So let me preface by saying I am not a very big supporter of AI in the workplace. And I know as a futurist, that's a really terrible thing to say. However,
you just took the sci-fi out of there.
So many thoughts. AI, this type, artificial intelligence, which is actually machine learning, this is only going to make all of our problems worse, because our problems are going to be coded into the technology, which what you just read, those data points show us. So what I find most amusing about new technology that people get very hype beast about is, one, they typically use it for problems it wasn't designed for. And two, they don't see the realities that it uncovers, right? So it's a mirror. It is showing you all of the ways that your day-to-day activities are harming certain groups of people and exactly how. And no one's looking at it that way to say, we need to learn from this. Why does this happen? This is reflective of all of the policies we've had for the past 50 years. Maybe we should fix that. Nope, don't care. Just give me the answer so I don't have to think about it.
I'm sorry for laughing. It is laughable, but it is not funny.
I know, right? It is. And the thing with the generative AI stuff, right? ChatGPT 3, 3.5, 4, whichever one we're on now. There are so many concerns with it. Where do I start? The data set, you don't know what it is. That's a problem. I should know how this model is being trained. And if I don't know how the model is being trained, I don't know exactly how it's getting to the conclusion that it's setting out for me to take and use in whatever way that I've decided I'm going to use it. I think the best example of why AI is not the solution to all of our talent problems in particular is mortgages, home loans, right? We know data experience, data again, that our home loan process is very, very discriminatory in nature, right? So there are so many stories of homeowners who happen to be Black who, when they get their home appraised, it's somehow worth 30% less than if a white homeowner lived there. We know this, and that is being built into the models that banks are using to automate this process. That's harm at scale. That's problematic. We shouldn't be doing this. But who is going to be the body that stops this from happening and then the body that corrects it? And I can't see it. I know that as a futurist, I'm supposed to have those answers, but I don't see it. I don't see anyone who's incentivized to do that also has the power to make it real.
But that's also part of being a futurist, right? Saying, hey, that solution doesn't exist yet.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping us honest.
Mm-hmm.
But that should be in the making.
Yeah. What, mm-hmm. How can I make money off of that? Who's going to pay for it?
Let's talk after the show. let's not give all our ideas away at once. Yep.
So,
Dr. Wendy, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Dr. Wendy, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I really absolutely agree with what Keon is saying, that I think that AI is dangerous. It's only going to react on the information that it is provided. And we are still, it's scary to think that the world that we operate in right now, we are challenged every time we walk out our door, just person to person. But now there's an additional challenge with the very technology that is being used to judge us. I can teach you in a course. I can teach you in a training. I can teach you in a setting about bias, about how to be a better ally, those kinds of things. You cannot do that with technology. It is trained to do what it's expected to do.
Yeah. I will add, I do have a solution. I misrepresented earlier.
Of course you do. Go ahead.
We need to introduce more social sciences into business and technology. Get some sociologists in there. Get some people who study human behavior and have an understanding of harm and ethics. And just get people who care about people involved in the process. That's
well, can yeah. Well, can you tell the government, because a lot of the funding is STEM, right? Yep. STEM. And STEM leaves out the social sciences.
Yep.
We're the social scientists that study the behaviors, and it's left out of the whole technological piece.
You know who are social scientists that don't pretend, or that pretend that they're not economists?
Oh, absolutely.
So they should be involved, right?
Absolutely. So now that we're talking about the social science and the social side of this, let's talk a bit more about what it means when we're having these conversations and difficult conversations that we've already discovered about performance, about goals, about your career progression, difficult conversations with your boss, with your manager. And how do we navigate that? I know we've talked about how do we get to trust and how do we build comfort around it. So I see things all the time. And on this show, I always bring up these lists that I find. Sometimes they're really good lists. Sometimes I think they need something else. I saw this one last week from upjourney.com, and it's about when you're having difficulty communicating with your boss. And so they've got some things here that sound pretty typical, right? Define the problem. What's really happening? Is it style? Is it time? Is it frequency? Gather some information from the other direct reports. Are they having the same experience? What does it look like? What can you borrow from their approach? How are they being successful? Focus on the business impact of what's happening. And while I've made that recommendation sometimes to people, it also is a way to dehumanize what's happening. So I don't like it when it's framed in this way. And then the list got pretty weird, and it felt like these definitely aren't our people talking about this. So it says, consider their personal life. Acknowledge that there are different communication styles. Recognize that you may not have said anything that excites them. It's not all, they said, oh, notice that it's not always about you. And then it says, communicate when it's only absolutely necessary. So help me clean this up. So what are the things we're thinking about, the challenges that we've identified in this process already, the innate bias of organizations as they approach this, the things that we're overlaying on top of it? How do we get under this and have a meaningful conversation with someone who could actually have a lot of our career in their hands with how they're communicating about us, not just to us, but to other people. What are the strategies we need to think about there?
Dr. Wendy, I'm going to let you go on this one.
Come on, social scientist.
Look, I would say being a part of the process, right? So when you are talking to me, it doesn't work for me. If I am coming along with you to share in what it should look like, for how many times we should have a discussion about what mapping out my career goals, that helps me out. I'm looking to be a part, a more collaborative. If every time someone that you report to feels that the only time they communicate with you is to give you something to do, that doesn't work. And so it's going to have to be more of a collective, collaborative effort to move forward. I'll start there.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it's important to just note that accountability requires authority. So it doesn't fall with me entirely. It's shared, right? Like coming to this conversation, building trust, building a working, an effective working relationship is on both of our responsibilities. I think when you're going into these conversations and you do need to hold your boss accountable, focus attention on communicating what your experience has been, how it impacts you, while knowing that they still have to decide that that matters to them. Right? So there's just two parts to this. And while the back half of that list that you shared, Lonnie, is not wonderful, it's again technically accurate because people are coming to work with all of this baggage all of the time. And so to just be aware of it is enough. You don't necessarily have to make any additional, you don't have to do extra work to make space for them. You just have to recognize that that might be a reality that you're facing. And the best advice I can give for being in corporate at any point in your career is to document everything. If it's not in writing, it is not real. And so an example, I have to do this all the time. I've had to do it my entire career. I still have to do it now, is following up in writing on a conversation that I had. It doesn't have to be so pointed as to say, we talked about X, Y, and Z, and you said this, this, and this. It can be much more cordial and familiar and just say, thank you for your time. I really enjoyed our chat. Here's what we talked about. And here's right. The timeline that I think makes sense. And then right. You always have that in your back pocket. So when things don't change in 3 months, you can say, well, here's what we talked about. What steps have you taken to address these issues and this timeline?
Accountability.
Yep.
So do you think that, do you think that this is happening on a regular basis? We talk about leaders not knowing how to lead, being rewarded for leaders in a leadership position for time on the job as opposed to contributions and skill set. Do you think that this is happening?
I'm gonna start on this. Absolutely. And we know it is because we talk about it every week on this show. No matter what the topic is, it always leads back to people haven't been trained and haven't been conditioned to do these things, right? We write about it. That's what was in our book, When Leadership Fails. We just had a special issue of the journal come out about when leaders attack. It's the same thing. Right. It's the work that Keon is doing about the future of work. All the considerations for the future of work about how to make it less toxic. No matter what we call it, whether we're saying it's chat GPT, we're saying it's AI, we're saying it's evolving the performance appraisal, performance management. All of it is about unpacking and unraveling all of the bad behaviors that keep compiling on top of each other. It happens all the time.
And I'm wondering if, you know, there's the culture of the business. If the culture is jammed up, then that means, did I say jammed up? Mm-hmm. Okay. if the culture is not conducive for growing, for learning, for having everyone to be successful in their goals on the job, then to be different is unique. But the more leaders would think about being different and being the change agent to do things differently, and the impact is going to be seen on everyone else that they have contact with. That just, it would be a small incremental change, but any change would be acceptable.
I agree. Just going back really quickly to something you said, Lonnie, I think it is terribly sad that the bar is to make things less toxic. That that's a moment in and of itself. Like, we're not even looking at it to be healthy or a thriving environment. We just want it to be just a little bit less toxic. It's happening all over the place. We did talk about leaders not being trained to be leaders, but there's also the part about, do you want to be a better leader? Because you could also be doing this on your own. You could be taking courses, you could be reading, you could be learning who your employees are so that you can show up better for them. So it's not all on the company. A lot of it is, don't get me wrong, they're not out of this. But also as a person, like, don't you want to be great or at least better? I've found in some of my studies that no, a lot of people don't want to be great or better.
This is just getting sadder.
It is, sadder. I know. But it's true. And I think we need to really come to terms with the fact that our business leaders aren't leaders, they're followers. Ellie Missel wrote an article in The Nation recently about how corporations are abandoning their 2020 DEIB commitments.
Yeah, we talked about
that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talked about that.
And I think we all knew it was going to happen because no one was tracking the commitments. I think there was one kind of brave actor who actually went through and started like writing down and documenting everything every company said they were going to.
You mean we weren't following up with emails with them saying, here's what you said, and by this time?
Yeah, who has the time, you know? And then 2 years later, all these positions that were opened up, all these people who were hired to do all of this great work that we were totally committed to doing, just disappear very, very quietly. And the numbers aren't different in terms of hiring and promotion. The impact isn't different, right? Like, everything is the same. And at one point, I feel like a lot of people, it was the same argument as the pipeline argument, right? There's just not enough Black and brown people in the pipeline for us to find, which is a lie. And now it's just, it's to this point where, well, we don't really know it's a problem. You have to show us with the data. And so I want to point out that McKinsey and Company released a report last summer called Race in the Workplace, the Frontline Experience. And I encourage people to read it. So 3 of 4 frontline workers want to be promoted. Fewer than 1 in 4 achieve it. Like, the numbers are there. The information is there. It's not a matter of not knowing what the problem is, not knowing what the answers are. It's a matter of actually doing something about it. And people don't want to.
Wow. And so I think this is a great point, because Dr. Wendy and I have been talking about what happened with New York Times last year and the big fiasco they had about people of color getting lower ratings in the job reviews. And so now we're kind of bringing this together with this real life example. Dr. Wendy, you want to unpack that a little bit about what happened and where they are and what it means for this conversation with us?
Okay. Caught me off guard. Sorry about that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, no, because we were looking at this together, right? So last year they had this big thing. It was in the news about people going through. There was a report. They were going through the evaluations at New York Times, and that the union was making an issue about it because they found that the Black and Latino employees were less likely than their white peers to get strong ratings, right? We know that that is information that we see in multiple organizations over time, that being Hispanic at the New York Times, this is back in the summer of 2022, reduced the odds of receiving a high score by about 60% and about 50% if you were Black. And then the Times, though, did some work around this, right? And they started doing something very distinct and been working on something, putting some goals, like we've been talking about with Keon, putting some goals in place for 2025.
And they incentivize them, though.
Yeah.
Their goal was to make sure that people of color made up 33% of the company. And that's exactly what took place. So 23% of its leadership positions by 2020 were made up by people of color. That's a concerted effort.
Yeah.
That's the level of, that's shifting the goalpost. Right, that's moving it. That's incentivizing. That's that multi-level marketing strategy. That means that when you have these kinds of incentives in place, and I hate to use the word incentive because they get rewarded for doing this when it's something that equity should be a part of the drive of the company just as a whole, not necessarily rewarded, but it made a difference. And so this was their idea of putting their money where their mouth is. And this worked for the Times. I'm thinking, how do other organizations, and I'm not just talking about corporate America, what about education? What about healthcare?
Healthcare, yeah.
What about the other industries? What types of commitments can leadership make so that we see the same change?
That's the perfect question for a futurist, right?
I would say so.
So this gets so sticky for me because the commitments are great, right? The incentives are great. Saying we have a plan, wonderful. Love to see it. But if the experience for the workers does not change, what are we talking about, right? We're just talking about higher attrition, which then they say, oh, they don't want to be here. Like, no, that's not the case. It's just not a good environment, right? And where's the accountability for that?
So it has to be a well-rounded goal for the organization. It's one thing to be the first, the only. It's also very difficult and painful, very painful. And so it's more than just making room at the table. It's making sure that the environment is conducive for them to be successful and welcome in that environment.
100%.
And the reason I love that is because I've been in meetings with executives and I've asked those same questions that you asked, Keon. I see your numbers, but tell me what the experience is like. Yes, your numbers moved up, but do people feel good about being here? Are they still being taken advantage of? Are they still experiencing harm on a regular and daily basis? Moving the numbers does not mean changing the experience. So let's talk about all the things that we learned today. So we said when we're dealing with having these difficult conversations around job performance, career aspirations, and goals, and your review in the workplace with your boss or your superiors. For employees, we want you to remember that your goals may be in conflict with the structure and design of the organization. Most times as employees, we want variability. They want consistency. Companies are designed for that. Remember that there are so many people who are managing this process for you who are not trained as leaders. So there's a deficiency in that. The inputs for success are very different for each person, even if they are written out as the same goal that must be achieved. Your best self is the best to you. It may not necessarily feel like the best to everyone else, that you've got to document everything. And Kenyon said, if it's not in writing, it is not real. Be sure to follow up on conversations when goals are set and when expectations are laid out. For leaders and supervisors, remember that communication is more of an art than a science. You can learn and develop as you go, that there is not one way to get it right. How is identity valued in how you're communicating about performance? What are you saying to people and how is that translating about their experience? How do you make sure as a leader and a manager that you are identifying the time and space to do this well, to give quality feedback, to give valuable input, to help people understand what your expectations are and to support them in meeting those? Check your baggage that you're bringing to the process and understand how that may impede your success in this or how it may impair someone else's success. You have the right to control how you show up. Do your work. We laugh about this, but I think this is a question we're going to throw out for everyone as you think about this in the leader and management space. What is your pyramid scheme around this, right? What is your multi-level marketing strategy? How do you make sure that you are rewarded for everyone else being successful? That may not come out from the organization itself, but you can develop your own plan for mastering that within your unit. Include employees in the process. Remember, this is collective and collaborative. This should not be a one-way conversation. This should be a discussion that develops over time. Do not be afraid to be different. Stand out and be the change. Set the wave for how these conversations happen in your organization. And always keep thinking about what you can do to better yourself. How can you improve your skills in this way? How can you communicate differently, communicate better? How can you help people? How can you shepherd them in the process? As it relates to groups and teams, remember that other people matter. This is about relationships in the workplace. This is about the social aspects of our organizations. Work to work well and to create healthy environments. Work together to create a space for everyone to show up in a way that's conducive to growth. This is not just about, as Keon mentioned, reducing toxicity, but it's also about creating spaces where people can grow and flourish. Solve the problems that plague us. What are you learning from the things that happen in your organization? Particularly, we talked about when it relates to technology. How are you using those lessons to fuel how you grow, not just your people, but your unit and the organization as a whole? Remember that accountability requires authority. As a group, as a team, as a unit, you can decide what that looks like and you can shape what that authority looks like. Maybe not authority, but you can shape what that accountability looks like across the people. Decide if you are leaders or followers. Most of us play both roles. Figure out when and how you need to do that. For the organizations, remember that there are so many leaders who are untrained in how to deal with people and particularly how to give feedback, constructive feedback about performance and to help them be better. It's your responsibility to help people get there. If you don't, they will improvise. Decide how managers are held accountable for the performance of people that work with them. What does this mean for performance evaluations and communication about work performance? How do you hold people at the top accountable and responsible for making sure that's done well? Remember, this is like going to a casino, right? There's a gamble in this. And so we want to make sure that the stakes are fair for everybody that's involved so that we get the best output. Decide or figure out if your rating system is just designed to support raises. Are you truly committed to growing employees, or are you just figuring out what's the number we need to give this 3%? Remember that identity plays a very big role in evaluation and how you communicate about that value. So work with people on how they see others, how they see themselves, and how that is translated across communication related to performance. Incentivize employee and career development. Make this part of what we do here. Decide how you protect your organization from creating problems that didn't exist when you think you're creating solutions. And we talk about that as relates to technology, that sometimes we're solving one problem but creating others. What are your safeguards? Who is being harmed? And remember that artificial intelligence, and we think it's about technology all the time. Technology is about efficiency. It may not be the solution for all your problems, particularly now as it relates to talent. Bring in the social scientists. We need to marry that set skill set with all the other things that are happening in organizations, particularly with tech, to make sure that we are understanding all of the elements involved. Get people involved in the process. Set concrete goals. Do the work. Hit the mark. And remember, we need accountability for the experience, not just the numbers. That's very important. So as we think about this and reflecting on those lessons, and we're looking at what it means to have fair, important, intelligent, influential conversations about work performance and goals and your career paths. If people are listening to us and decide not to take any of this advice, what is the tax that they pay? So what is the black and brown tax that you pay for not heeding this advice? Keon, what is that?
You know, too much, I think is the right answer. Too much. Something I was thinking about as you were recapping all that is work is such a big part of our lives. And for better or for worse, many of us look to work to serve a purpose in our life, to, you know, achieve purpose in our life. So just make sure it's working for you. You do have the power to walk away. And I know there's risk associated with that, but find where you're valued. Find where you're doing what you need to do for you to be the best you.
I love it. Dr. Wendy.
Love that. I would say that I'm going to speak to the leader-follower relationship and that it is reciprocated. And so to not be able to use any of the strategies that are provided and affordable to you through this wonderful broadcast, I want you to just think about your role as a tribe member. Your tribe takes care of you, supports you, helps you, ensures that you are successful. That's less that you have to teach.
And if they don't, that's not the tribe.
There you go.
Wow. And I think that the thing that stands out for me most came at part of the end, and Keon, you mentioned this, that we need to have accountability for the experience, not just the numbers. And that's the social scientist in me. That's the social scientist that we're recommending. That's what we're saying. We need all of us to have that lens. And so if you aren't paying attention to the points that we made today, and if you decide to not heed this advice, then what we risk is the experience not changing. And that's where we cemented this conversation in, that we've been doing this work, that this is a real thing. It happens all the time. We talk about these same types of things all the time. We write about it. We have people, there are multiple toxic leadership podcasts, that if we do not pay attention at this level, the experience doesn't go away. We discussed a lot. I appreciate y'all so much for coming and joining us. Keon, Gary, thank you so much for your futurist perspective and your expertise and opening our eyes to so many things, and for being so honest. And we need honesty when we're having these conversations. So we're talking about shifting goalposts and playing telephone. Shout out to you, Justin, for that. We need to have someone like you to hold us accountable in these conversations. Dr. Wendy, thank you so much for being an excellent co-host. It is always my pleasure to be here with you. For all of you who are listening right now live, we appreciate you. If you're going to listen to this later, shout out to you then. We want to continue this conversation. So if there's something that was shared that resonates with you, or there's a lingering question, or you had an aha moment, or you got some thoughts about a future discussion, we want you to use this hashtag, TAP Reflections. So the access point reflections across any social media to let us know what you're thinking. If you want to join us live, we are always here on Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time via Twitter Spaces. Thank you both, Keon, Dr. Wendy. Y'all have a good night.
Good night.